Hello, everyone, and I appreciate APHA for inviting me to come and speak to you. And I'm really excited to be here and show you the wealth of research that's coming out of our university at Loma Linda University. And I'm here to talk to you about CBPR, community-based participatory research, as an approach to develop environmental health emergency resilience. And I would like to state that I have no personal relationship, financial relationships to disclose. Everyone here is susceptible to an environmental hazard of natural sorts. Everyone here is susceptible to either an earthquake, as we are in California, floods, tornadoes, hurricanes, you name it, we're all susceptible. And after the events of 9/11, we're also keenly aware that the man-made disasters can be equally or perhaps even more devastating. And regardless of the origin, environmental health and emergency, regardless of the origin, emergencies or disasters have negative repercussions on the environmental health and safety of those affected. And during these times, the most essential necessities of life can be compromised. These include water, food, sanitation and hygiene, and adequate shelter. It is for this reason that the Environmental Health and Emergency Preparedness and Response Departments in public health have been charged to coordinate their efforts in order to prepare communities for these types of events. Unfortunately, there is an inequitable distribution of resources and education, which creates great disparities in health and emergency preparedness. Those with few resources, high infrastructure vulnerabilities, and those who are isolated, either because of geography, culture, language, or politics, are oftentimes not included in the resource allocation, planning, and preparedness for complex emergencies. Environmental health lessons learned from Hurricane Katrina highlighted the need to use community participatory methods to properly prepare communities for disasters. It is for this reason that we have decided to use community-based participatory research methods as a framework for our study. And this framework is really special because it guides communities in actively creating and implementing their own solutions to emergency preparedness. This framework facilitates the reciprocal transfer of knowledge, skills, capacity, and power. So all of those who are engaged in this type of research and in this open conversation are seen as equal experts, whether they be community members, whether they be public health students, as my colleague here explained, or public health employees or professionals or government agencies or government officials, we're all seen as equal and able to offer our expertise and our experience. CBPR aims to eliminate health disparities by combining knowledge and action in order to achieve social change. In our study, our goal is to create a model that we will use to create disaster resilient communities. And disaster resilient communities are those that are able to quickly bounce back from a disaster and emergency event and go back to their normal state, either that or recreate a new normal state in a quick fashion. So in our study, we're going to compare the more traditional approach, which is the expert-driven or top-down approach, where the public health department has the resource and the knowledge that then trickles down to community-based organizations that partner up and then trickle down the information to community members. So we will be comparing that model to a more community-based participatory model where everyone is seen as an equal partner and there's an equal exchange of resources and information. The study aims to forge a more active partnership between these three members, the community members, the community-based organizations, and the public health department. And in the process, we hope to move towards a sustainable, community-focused environmental health emergency preparedness system conducive to environmental justice. I'd like to provide an overview of our study. Our study is a 4-year study, and right now we are just finishing the first phase in year one, the qualitative inquiry phase. Pretty much in this phase, we have conducted stakeholder interviews, focus group discussions, windshield surveys, GIS analysis, and as a result of all of this, we have decided which county in Southern California we are going to use as the intervention county. Also in this phase, we prepared both the environmental health departments and the preparedness and response departments of San Bernardino County and Riverside County, which are neighbor counties, by giving them an intensive boot camp, which is the California Environmental Health Training and Emergency Response. So this is a program that has been designed by the CDC, but it has been modeled or changed somewhat to fit the needs of those in California. So that's where we are at the point. We're finishing phase one and entering phase two. And that's where all the qualitative data that we have gathered will be used to create two survey tools. And one is for the Environmental Health and Emergency Preparedness and Response Workforce. And in that survey tool, we hope to capture what this workforce believes is their role and responsibility in engaging communities in emergency preparedness. And for the second survey tool, we hope to determine what the community believes is their capacity at the household level and at the community level to prepare for emergencies. And what is their capacity to engage in this conversation with others, including the public health department. From there, we will go on to our third phase, which is the capacity building phase. And that's where we use the qualitative and quantitative research to create a customized, culturally appropriate train-the-trainer curriculum. We have partnered with organizations that already have a wide use of promotores or community lay workers. And we will be teaching them to then go into the community and prepare the community for emergencies. And finally, in year four, we will be doing all the post-assessments and putting all the data together into a multimedia toolkit that we hope to spread to other public health departments in the nation. Perhaps these methods will be useful to them in their preparedness efforts. So the rest of my presentation will be an overview of phase one, the qualitative phase. This study as a whole is a mixed methods, quasi-experimental intervention study. The study location is the Inland Empire of Southern California. As my colleague mentioned, Loma Linda University is located in San Bernardino County, and we are working in this project in San Bernardino County and Riverside County. Now, these counties are one of the biggest, if not the biggest, in the nation. They're also two of the counties in the nation that are experiencing the greatest population growth, as many are moving from the coastal area to an area that is more affordable. As my colleague mentioned, we're threatened by many hazards, including the San Andreas Fault and other major fault lines that are dormant right in our neighborhood. And aside from that, we deal with, in this area, a lot of man-made hazards. As you may be aware, Long Beach and Los Angeles are the major port cities in the nation. And all the goods that come from this side of the world go through those two ports. And that port at the waterfront actually extends 60 miles inland into these two counties via railroads. And the communities that we are working with, we are helping to train them to prepare for not only a natural event such as an earthquake, but also in case there is a train derailment in their neighborhood or in their backyard, in which chemical spills may be real hazardous to their health. Also, the communities in these two counties living near the rail yard deal with warehouses built right in their neighborhoods. And in these warehouses, they have no idea what is stored. They can see the hazards triangle, but they're not chemists. They don't know what's actually stored in there. And they don't know if these chemicals were to mix, what kind of reaction it would have. And so aside from the natural hazards training, we're also training them to prepare in case of a man-made disaster or emergency. When we first started this qualitative phase, we weren't really sure which of the two counties we were going to do the intervention in. And so we started with the key informant interviews with these two departments, Environmental Health and Emergency Preparedness and Response of both counties. And through these interviews, we were able to see which of the two county public health agencies was most willing and most ready for a CBPR type of approach, which was more willing and ready to engage community members in directly in emergency preparedness. During this phase, we were also unsure which organizations we were going to partner with. And as we conducted these interviews and we asked for suggestions, we learned about two agencies. One, the Center for Community Action and Environmental Justice. They are located in Riverside County, very close to the border of the city of Riverside, but they also have a site in San Bernardino City. And we learned of Poder Popular. Poder Popular of the Coachella Valley is a community-based organization that deals with environmental health issues in the rural area of Riverside County. Thus, we decided that we would select Riverside County as our intervention site. So here are the results of our qualitative analysis. Although officially charged with preparing communities for emergencies, public health entities were not clear about their roles and responsibilities, leaving response coordination largely fluid. So I will read to you some quotes that pretty much highlight the major themes that we learned. An environmental health professional was quoted as saying, with respects to the specific strategies for assisting vulnerable communities that are impacted by a disaster, he said, environmental health is charged under state and local laws and everything like that, so no, that's not really our responsibility. Their responsibility is more in the enforcing codes at restaurants and buildings. And the emergency preparedness and response professional was quoted as saying, when comparing the two departments, environmental health is the code enforcement section. They do vector control, restaurant inspections, wastewater inspections, and treatment. The program you're visiting today is the Emergency Preparedness and Response Program. What we do here is bioterrorism and pandemic influenza planning. And he wasn't really too keen on preparing communities directly or engaging communities directly in emergency preparedness. And I'll talk more about that later. Next. Another emerging theme is that while public health key informants largely feel that their departments serve community residents through other stakeholders and service providers, and another part of the quote is that they don't feel like they are directly responsible in setting up these linkages. So a professional from Emergency and Preparedness and Response said, we reach out through the cities and towns to get to their larger client base, which would be their citizens. So they prepare kind of or partner up with the middleman who will then go or takes on the role to go to the community itself. An environmental health professional stated, I think we do extremely well in engaging with our community, the one we regulate. With the rest of the community, we can do a good job, but we are limited in that area because that is not really our major focus. When we interviewed the community members, we learned that community key informants perceive that environmental health emergency preparedness information and services are not equally accessible to them. A community member and environmental justice advocate stated, they, meaning public health, are doing some really good work, but it's not out in the community for everybody. So if something happens, there is a whole group of people that wouldn't have the slightest idea of what is available for them. Another emerging theme is that members of vulnerable communities are ready for social action, but their efforts are thwarted by their lack of trust in government agencies. A community member said, they rather struggle and do what they can on their own than ask government for assistance because they are fearful of them. So obviously, a lot of barriers have emerged as part of these interviews. And for the public health workforce, these include time, and another is money. And while emergency preparedness and response departments do have a lot of grant funding, the grant funding is more like was said for bioterrorism preparedness and pandemic flu preparedness, and the money is not really there for engaging directly with community members and preparing them. And for the environmental health departments, their money is limited, they do not have as much grant funding, and most of it comes from fee for services from when they go and do their inspections at restaurants and buildings. Language is a major obstacle because, as you know, Southern California, it's a melting pot. There are so many different cultures and languages spoken, so it is really difficult for a public health workforce to be prepared with interpreters or people in their workforce to go out and engage community in their language. There have been a lot of staff cutting. And budget cuts, so they're limited on staff. They're unclear in terms of responsibilities. Also, there's lack of cooperation. There seems to be a lack of cooperation between environmental health and emergency preparedness and response departments, except when it comes to actual responding, but not when it comes to preparing. The scientific background that this workforce holds can be a barrier as they are sometimes unable to communicate in plain language to regular individuals or just average individuals, and so people can understand them. There's lack of trust between the government agencies and the communities and vice versa that needs to be built. And community engagement methods are cumbersome, to say the least. That's what one person said. We are scientists, not social scientists, and therefore we shouldn't be asked to do this type of work. The community also faces some barriers. They feel that they are resilient because they oftentimes do have to fend for themselves. However, this resilience doesn't translate to disaster resilience, and it does not translate to emergency preparedness. Community residents are confident in their abilities to participate as equal partners in preparing themselves and in creating plans and interventions for emergency preparedness. However, they want to be invited to the conversation. So what are some facilitators for the environmental health and emergency preparedness and response workforce? The use of there are content experts, and they can use this to their advantage. If they use it in a culturally competent manner, in a way that's also linguistically appropriate, they can build trust and facilitate empowerment by working with community stakeholders and with community organizations, such as the two that I mentioned previously. They can maintain the open communication, and instead of coming in as experts into a community with the right answer for your problem, they can come in and with a yearning to learn what the community says it needs and what they want, and find a middle ground to where everyone's goals can be met and needs. For the community, the facilitator, of course, is no scientific jargon. They want to be spoken to in plain language. The community wants to know, to be taught how to survive even when government agencies or public health or first responders can't come to their rescue. Because as we know, in major events, it's not that they don't want to come to the rescue, it's that they may be overly taxed and can't come to the rescue. The community members want to be able to identify key partners and organizations that may come to them or that they can go to and rely on in time of emergency or disaster. And of course, they want the information and programs to be easily accessible for everyone. I'd like to acknowledge the CDC for supporting this project, and I also like to thank my graduate students, Griselda Gomez, Ashwini Arande, David Busolo, and Biblia Kim, for all your hard work. Thank you.
I'd like to go ahead and open things up for questions. Please go ahead.
Hi, to the two presenters from Global Linda. It's really interesting to get perspective from the community level, and wondered if you have done any official work in, or if you know how disasters are currently being responded to, how public health emergencies are currently being responded to in your communities.
To my knowledge, when it comes to wildfires, the fire department is always on their toes. Like, once there's a fire, even if it's a false alarm, they're ready and set to go. So in terms of earthquakes or other forms of disasters, I'm not sure.
So do you know or have you guys documented how the public health departments are engaged in different disasters at the local level?
From my understanding, when it comes to response, the public health department is right there, ready to work. It's when it comes to preparedness where there seems to be a gap. So I know specifically in San Bernardino County, when we interviewed the environmental health workforce, they spoke a lot about the wildfires because that was their major event. And it seemed like they were really prepared and had a good system going on, where they were on scene even before they were notified. They have people from their workforce that live in different areas of the county, whether it be the mountain, the desert, or the local city, and they have specific responsibilities on how to respond in case of an emergency in their local site at home. So they are really prepared to respond. It's when it comes to the preparedness that they're not so.
Thank you. Any other questions? And from a general statewide perspective, there is the California Emergency Services Act as well, which essentially mandates that counties and local governments have to be prepared to respond to an emergency. So any applicable county agency, public health, fire department, sheriffs, even Department of Social Services, any agency that has a possible role in disaster response has to be prepared and has to respond when called upon. So the short answer is yes, environmental health, regardless of county in California, should be prepared. The level of preparedness, yeah, it can vary between counties, but every county should be prepared. You know, it's just every county has a different capability of preparedness right now.
Feels and the way that workforce feels. do they feel more competent to go into the community and do the separate work, or do they know the same sentiments? So that's what we hope to learn in the second phase. And because we are seeing all these barriers and we do want to create the linkages, I don't know how strong the linkages are going to be, but we do want to create some linkages because they don't exist right now. And that's also the purpose of the train-the-trainer model, where the communities themselves are going to have the information and be equipped to be prepared in case someone comes to help.
Go ahead.
I was interested, Dr. Sato, you were talking a little bit about how people don't really have much faith in effect efficacy, that preparing isn't going to do any good, because it seems like what's going to happen is going to happen anyway. I wonder if and you also talked about maybe past experiences of disasters, is this a kind of a cultural understanding that we have to kind of give ourselves over to fate, or what is, have you been able to tease that out any?
So this study found that the Chinese and non-Chinese differences in terms of the health. So Chinese people are more likely to think that they cannot do anything about it when in the disaster. And then my colleague, he's a Tibetan, and he told the same thing. So, but he prepared for disaster, actually, but also he feels the same way, so it's nothing they can do about it. So maybe there may be some cultural differences. However, that the survey shows that the most injuries can be prevented and also reduced as to the appropriate preparedness. So maybe this is a key point that if we address to the Chinese population to discuss the importance of disaster preparedness, and also that they should do the action soon rather than later. I hope I answered your question.
Any other questions?
I wanted to add on that.
Do you want to use the podium? Do you want to use the podium?
Sure.
I wanted to add on that past experience, I think, plays a major role in people's response or openness to being prepared. And my friend here from San Francisco, I met you at the UCLA conference. I think one of the reasons why the Bay Area is so open to preparing is because they actually experienced a major earthquake. I was part of it myself. I was a teenager, but that's why they are so open to that and why they are such a model for the nation on preparedness. And also for the communities that we're working in, the reason why I feel that they are open to preparedness intervention is because they deal with it on a daily basis. Every day they deal with the possibility of a train derailing in their backyard, spilling chemicals into their neighborhood, and it has happened before. There was no emergency plan in place. That community was actually closed off from the rest of the community, and freeways were closed, streets were closed. And that community had no idea what was going on. No one came to the rescue. No one told them anything. They couldn't go in and out. So they have experienced it. And so they embrace the idea of preparedness. In our rural community, they also deal with environmental health emergencies on a daily basis because they deal with arsenic in their water. So that is a major threat every day. So preparing for a major or all hazards event, they are definitely open for it.
Thank you, Thelma. In the back?
I was going to comment on that. We've done two studies, a California-based study on earthquake preparedness, as well as a national study on disaster preparedness and terrorism. And disaster experience actually drops out of the model in terms of why people prepare overall. And for California, specifically for earthquake preparedness, the regions that were most at risk were actually the areas that were least prepared. There was actually an inverse correlation.
That is interesting. Which counties did you look at?
All of the counties in California were surveyed. And in terms of the national survey, we used about 3,000 people in terms of the household survey. And we had over 6,000 disaster experiences reported within our survey. And those disaster experiences got them involved in seeing how they could predict this is a variable. And risk actually got them involved as well.
That is fascinating. Thank you. I saw another hand raised. Was there another question? Okay, in that case, thank you all very much, and thank you to all of our presenters as well.